Well, it's my pleasure to introduce as our first speaker, Brother Dan Manette. And as we've heard and enjoyed the ministry of Brother Dan, I think there's one thing we can usually count on. He is very diverse in his subjects. He is very rounded out and actually chooses many subjects that we don't think about too much. So we appreciate his ministry along that line. And the subject he has today is one I don't think you've heard as a subject, as a talk. It's Why Waldo. Why Waldo? Brother Jerry. And take your full time, Jerry. Don't worry.
Thank you, Brother Ken, and good morning, brethren. It's good to be here. We bring with us the love of the brethren at Hartford. A number of us are here, but some of the brethren couldn't make it for various reasons, voted to have their love sent. As Brother Ken mentioned, our subject this morning is Why Waldo? When we think of the seven stages of the church, Bible students have different opinions on the dates and the beginnings and the ends of these periods. We also have different thoughts on who the messengers to some of the churches were and what their message was. And while there is certainly no single interpretation that is agreed upon and accepted by all, there is at least a framework of common consensus that is agreeable to by many. And it is in accordance with this framework of general agreement that this study is presented. Of all the messengers to the seven stages of church, the one that I knew the least about was the messenger to the fourth. So our subject today is to better understand why Waldo. The fourth stage of the church is Thyatira. It covers the period from about 1160 to 1378, around 220 years, and its messenger, we'll suggest, is Peter Waldo, who was born in 1140 and died in 1217. He lived in Lyon, France. There is admittedly not a great deal known about Waldo. What is generally known and agreed upon is that he was a very wealthy merchant who consecrated his life to serve the Lord, divested himself of all his wealth in order to pursue a life of evangelical perfection, which to medieval Catholics, which Waldo was, meant following the example of Christ, including living a life of poverty and having no personal wealth or possessions. In his sincere desire to learn the scriptures, because Waldo could not read the Latin Vulgate, which was the only translation then available, Waldo did something that no one else had yet to do. From his own money, he paid scholars to translate the four Gospels and some of the books of the Old Testament from Latin into French. For this, the Christian world under divine providence is indebted to Waldo for the first translation of a large portion of the Bible into a modern tongue. Now, as to how Waldo began his journey into the search of the truth, there are two different accounts that have come down to us. One account is that he was conversing on various matters with several other principal citizens of Lyon, when suddenly and unexpectedly one of his companions fell to the ground and died. This experience had a profound and life-altering effect upon Waldo. It caused him to seriously reflect on the mortality of man and the death penalty upon the human race. And this reflection in a short time led him to amend his life and to be more diligent in the fear of God. He then started to distribute alms liberally to the poor and to discuss the virtues of goodness with others at every opportunity. Waldo continued his efforts to help the poor, while at the same time his intense desire not only to understand the scriptures himself, but to teach them to others, impelled him to employ a priest to translate the four Gospels and other books of Holy Writ from Latin into French. And when this was done, by careful study of these books, Waldo came to the conclusion that the best way to follow Christ and the apostles was to totally abandon his mercantile vocation and distribute all his riches among the poor. He then began publicly preaching the doctrines and precepts of Christianity, especially the importance of goodness and living a pure and simple life, as did those of the early church. His efforts were met with good success among many of his neighbors and countrymen, and after a short time, other men of similar sentiment and devotion joined themselves to Waldo and followed his example of divesting themselves of earthly riches and then devoting their lives to publicly preaching the gospel. For this reason, these became known as the Poor Men of Lyon, and the movement as a whole came to be known as the Waldenses. That's our first account. Now there's another and totally different account of the beginning of Waldo's journey into the way of the truth, and it goes like this. By the year 1173, when Waldo was 33 years old, he had made himself a lot of money, and a good deal of it, it is claimed, was made by wicked usury, or the unfair business practice of lending money at a very high rate of interest. One Sunday, he joined a crowd which had gathered around a traveling troubadour, one who sings love songs and lyric poetry. And Waldo was smitten by his words, which told the story of the legend of Saint Alexis. The story was that Alexis, who was the privileged son of a Roman senator of enormous wealth and power in the 4th century, this Alexis left his wealth and his wife in order to embark on a pilgrimage to the Holy Land, and afterward went on to devote his life to the care of the poor. Waldo, it is said, was so moved by this story of Alexis that the next morning he hurried to the nearest school of theology to seek counsel concerning his eternal destiny. And when he was taught many ways of going to God, he asked what was the most certain and the more perfect way than all the others. He was answered with this text from Matthew 19:21. If thou wilt be perfect, go and sell all that thou hast and give to the poor, and thou shalt have treasure in heaven, and come and follow me. Waldo took this to heart, and he took it very literally. Shortly after, he went to his wife, and he gave her the choice of keeping either his money or his real estate, which was quite vast and included ponds, and fields, groves, vineyards, mills, and houses. Now, she was naturally much displeased with having to make such a choice, but seeing that she had to choose, she kept the real estate. And then from his liquid assets, Waldo made restitution to those he had treated unjustly. And he gave a large amount of money for the lifelong support of his little daughters, who, without their mother's knowledge, he placed in the convent of Font Everard, which was quite exclusive and reserved for only the very wealthy. But the greatest of his money he gave to the poor. At the time, it is said that there was a famine in the land, and he gave food to everyone that came to him. During this period of time when he was divesting himself of his wealth, he also paid to have the Latin Bible translated into the common French dialect of his day. And so goes the second account of how Waldo began his personal journey into the truth. Now, the church that Waldo was the messenger to was Thyatira, which historically was famously known for its production of red and purple dyes that were so costly to make, only the very rich or those of royalty wore clothes dyed these colors. You recall how Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots, was clothed in Revelation 17:4. She was arrayed in purple and scarlet color. It is very appropriate, then, that the city of Thyatira, which produced and symbolically possessed these characteristics of royalty, was used as the fourth stage of the church, because papacy had, by this time, reached its very zenith of regal power, both civil and religious. During this period, while the true church suffered hardships in the wilderness, the papal church sat on a throne with the kings of the earth. The word Thyatira carries the meanings of sweet perfume of sacrifice, slow burning incense, or sacrifice under duress. And this definition is certainly appropriate because God's people during the entire period of the fourth stage of the church suffered severe persecution of both mind and body. In fact, Thyatira is uniquely the only period of the seven stages of church history that is totally, from beginning to end, within the 1260 years of papacy's power to persecute the saints. As the definition suggests, those saints of Thyatira who were submissive to the Lord's leadings under these crushing experiences became like a sweet incense to God. Well, turn with me now, if you would, to Revelation 2. Revelation 2, we'd like to begin by reading verses 18 and 19. I'm going to read from the RSV. Revelation 2, 18 and 19. I know your works, your love and faith and service and patient endurance, and that your latter works exceed the first. The Lord here comments and shows his appreciation for the faithful labors of the true church. And at the end of the verse, he says a peculiar thing, that the last exceeds or is more than the first. Now, there are a few possible ways of understanding this phrase. Some have suggested that because the language here is similar to that used to Ephesus, the first stage of the church, it means that in the Lord's estimation, the works of the church of Thyatira were even more abundant than were the works of Ephesus. Another way to understand this verse, which I think is much better, is that all the works in the list refer to the works of Thyatira. In this case, it is saying the works they did near the end of the list exceeded those works done at its beginning. It is saying that during this stage of the church, the Lord had greater appreciation for service and patient endurance, which are the works at the end of the list, than he did for faith and love, which are first in the list. It is not as though love and faith weren't important or appreciated, but because papacy's persecuting power was so strong at this time, service and patient endurance, which are last in the list, would be the most difficult and so greatly needed that they were exceedingly regarded by the Lord. Now, in regard to Waldo's works, contrary to what some commentators say, who want to make Waldo into a modern-day Protestant, in the very beginning of Waldo's ministry, there was really nothing of any of his works, of what he said or what he did, that was considered heretical by the Catholic Church. As far as they were concerned, there was nothing new in Waldo's taking vows of poverty or in devoting himself to the study of the scriptures. Both of these things had been regular practices of some orders of monks who lived in the monasteries for a few hundred years already. Like other holy orders of their day, Waldo and the poor men of Lyons dressed like monks, lived in chastity, went barefoot or in sandals, and pooled their earnings communistically. For a time, the clergy didn't make any objections to this new group. They were even allowed, it is said, to read and sing in the churches. But when Waldo and his followers began to preach publicly, they had crossed the line. And the Archbishop of Lyons rather sharply reminded them that only the bishops were allowed to preach. In fact, at this time, in the late 1100s, the priests themselves neither preached during the Mass or instructed the local flock in the proper practices of their religion. Their main duty as priests, besides collecting taxes in the form of tithes for their local bishop, was first and foremost the administration and sacraments and to say the Latin Mass, to administer the sacraments. Now, Waldo and his followers wanted to continue preaching the gospel without the threat of being shut down by the bishop. So in 1179, Waldo sought official approval from the Catholic Church for his poor men of Lyons. They wanted to be recognized as a holy order, much like the other order of monks who were not full-fledged priests, but who desired nonetheless to live a religious life. This being the case, a delegation of Waldenses presented themselves before the Third Lateran Council in order to obtain official approval for their movement. An English friar named Walter Mapes, who examined them there and was an eyewitness to the proceedings, wrote the following about Waldo's small group. Quote, "We saw Waldensian men in the Roman Council held by Pope Alexander III. They were simple and unlearned, and were thus called from the name of their founder, Waldo, who was a citizen of Lyons on the Rhone. They presented to the Pope a book written in the old provincial language in which there were texts and comments of the Psalms and of many books of the Old and New Testaments. They most urgently requested him to authorize them to preach because they saw themselves as experienced persons, although they were nothing more than dabblers." Now, he goes on to describe the Waldenses as having no fixed habitation. They go about two by two, barefoot, clad in woolen garments, owning nothing. Now, this eyewitness sums up his opinion of whether the Waldenses should be granted permission to publicly preach by saying the following, quote, "Shall the word be given to the ignorant, whom we know to be incapable of receiving it, much less of giving in their turn what they have received? Away with this. Erase it. Let waters be drawn from the fountain, not from puddles in the streets." Well, from these comments, it seems that the Waldenses didn't make a very favorable impression upon the council in regards to their ability to publicly preach the gospel. Now, as part of their petition for official approval of the Catholic Church, the Waldenses affirmed their belief in a transubstantiation, prayers for the dead, and infant baptism. Waldo also signed a confession of faith, affirming his belief in the Trinity and in the one church, Catholic, holy, apostolic, and immaculate, apart from which no one can be saved. From this evidence, we see that the early Waldenses considered themselves to be Catholic in all matters of theology. But this by no means disqualifies Waldo from being the fourth messenger, because the doctrinal truths that would separate the wheat from the tares were not yet due. Waldo, by all evidences, was fully consecrated to the Lord. He sacrificed all he had in order to spread the gospel, and he lived his life in harmony with the truth then available and given. Waldo's efforts seem in this light to establish the Poor of Lyons as a Catholic order were commendable and even scriptural, because it was not yet time to separate oneself from and come out of Babylon. Now, his petition was considered, and it would probably have been granted, but for one thing. Waldo wanted, in fact, he insisted upon the right to publicly preach the word, and that the Pope nor the local bishops in and around Lyon absolutely would not tolerate. Waldo and his disciples were ordered by the council to obey their prohibition in this matter of public preaching, but to do so meant they could never teach or present the gospel to others, and this they could not agree to do. So Waldo and the poor men of Lyons disobeyed the Pope's orders to cease their public preaching, and this brought upon them the wrath of the Archbishop of Lyon. And even though at the time the Waldenses had no specific doctrinal quarrel with Rome, and their public preaching was mainly along the lines of devotion to God and to good works, their defiance of the Mother Church's ban against public preaching led in just a few short years to their condemnation as heretics and their expulsion from the church by a synod of bishops meeting in Verona in the year 1184. While the Waldenses were officially condemned as heretics, even so, in the early phase of their history, they still accepted all seven sacraments of the Catholic Church. But it was only natural that after being excluded from the Church, Waldo and his followers would begin to re-examine such Church teachings that claimed they would be condemned to hell in the next life. And now that they could examine and study the Bible in their own language, they slowly began to drift away from church dogma, so that over the next 300 years, they did eventually come to espouse teachings that really were heretical when judged by the standards of medieval Catholic orthodoxy. Now, in the very early stages of their movement, and despite the opposition of the Catholic Church, Waldenses churches and schools of learning flourished, and they spread from France to Italy to Germany to Switzerland and to elsewhere. In order to check their growth and their influence among the people, which was due in large part to having the scriptures available to them in their native tongue, a council of Toulouse in 1220 decreed that no lay folk who were not of the clergy should possess scriptural books. It was shortly after this decree that the Inquisition was instituted, and the Waldenses, though not the sole targets, would not escape. Thousands were burned at the stake. The Waldo himself died in the year 1217 in Bohemia at the age of 77, and apparently by natural death, about 10 years before the official beginning of the Papal Inquisition. But the Papal Church all by itself could not carry out what ranks as one of the darkest blots on the record of human history without the help of the state. This is referred to in Revelation 2 and verses 20 to 23, which we'd like to read. Revelation 2, verses 20 to 23. Notwithstanding, I have a few things against thee, because thou sufferest that woman Jezebel, which calleth herself a prophetess, to teach and to seduce my servants to commit fornication and to eat things sacrificed unto idols. And I gave her space to repent of her fornication, and she repented not. Behold, I will cast her into a bed, and them that commit adultery with her into great tribulation, except they repent of their deeds. And I will kill her children with death. And all the churches shall know that I am he which searcheth the reins and the hearts, and I will give unto every one of you according to your works. Verse 20 references the Old Testament type of Jezebel, who protected the priests of Baal and persecuted Elijah through the secular power of her illicit husband, Ahab, so that Elijah had to dwell in the wilderness for 3.5 years. So here, during the fourth stage of the church, the Roman Catholic Church persecutes the true church through her illicit husband, the kings of Europe, so that the true church must dwell in the wilderness, in many cases not only symbolically, but literally, because they will not join in her fornication by accepting her church-state authority or conforming to her false claims that the papacy was Christ's kingdom on earth. And even though the Lord commended the brethren for their love, faith, and especially their service and patient endurance during this period, he says he has a few things against them because they suffered that woman to teach and seduce his servants. As to what exactly this criticism is referring to, we can't be 100% sure. But it seems that the church was guilty of a certain character weakness during this period. Instead of actively fighting against and openly exposing the errors...